We are in lesson number 26 in 1 Samuel, chapter 14. We're going to beginning with verse number 16. Now, where we left off last week was really, truly exciting. You see, Jonathan had made this plan. Just him and his armor bearer were going to go on a secret little mission. He was not going to tell his father, King Saul, and he was not going to tell the 1,000 men that were with him in the camp. Everybody was asleep or whatever. And so Jonathan and his armor bearer sneak down to the camp of the Philistines at Michmash. Second time he's done something like this. He sneaks down there and he says to his armor bearer, now here's the deal. This is what we're going to find out what God's will is. We're going to call out to the Philistines. And if they say, hey, we'll come to you, that means it's not God's will. We need to get out of here. But if when we call out to the Philistines, they say, option two, come on down and we will talk to you. Then Jonathan says, that means it is God's will and we're going to go. It is God's will for us to attack this camp, just two of us by ourselves. Well, also what happened, if you remember, is in the span of what ox could plow in half a morning of the furrows that are in the field, plow about half of a field in the morning or half of a field in the afternoon, didn't matter which one it was, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed about 20 men. But then the earth began to tremble. And if you remember, I left off last week by saying the trembling was not because of Jonathan. The trembling was not because of the armor bearer. The trembling was not because of the men of the Philistines running. The trembling was because of God. And the trembling of the earth was not so localized that it was only felt there in the garrison of the Philistines. As we read on, we're going to find it was felt all the way to the camp of Saul. We come to what the sentinels reported back to Saul, verse number 16. Now Saul's watchman in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went here and there. Now remember, Gibeah is not very far from Geba. Neither Gibeah nor Geba are far from Michmash. And when the trembling occurred, this watchman, the sentinel watchman of Saul in his hometown in Gibeah, who's watching over the wall or whatever, reports that the Philistine camp is melting away. They're just going away. In other words, the Philistines were running for their lives from Jonathan, from the armor bearer, and again also, as I told you, they're running from the Lord. Now naturally, Saul wanted to know what caused the Philistines to run in fear. So Saul called on the people for a warrior census. I mean, he wants to count his army. Here is what they discovered. Verse number 17, chapter 14. Saul said to the people who were with him, number now and see who has gone from us. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. Everyone was still in the two camps, the one in Gibeah and the one in Geba, except Jonathan and his armor bearer. Wow. This whole situation caused Saul to immediately put forth an interesting summons. He demanded that the ark, which is at Shiloh, be brought. He did the natural thing with his summons. He turned to the possible future high priest that we were introduced to a few verses back. The future high priest, who is not even old enough to be a priest yet. The young man who is with him as a warrior in his camp, and he gave him an order, verse number 18. Then Saul said to Ahijah, bring the ark of God here, for the ark of God was at that time with the sons of Israel. Where is it? It's still in Shiloh. Saul's summons order to Ahijah is in no way meant to tell us that Ahijah could fulfill that demand of the king. Ahijah was in the priestly line. He was related to the high priest Eli. He was related to the priests above him. What could Ahijah do? All he could do was take the notice of the summons of Saul to his priestly father's relatives, who did have the authority to fulfill or to reject Saul's demand. So the writer tells us that while Saul was making his demand on the priest, something came about. He became notified of something that changed his mind. Verse number 19. While Saul talked to the priest, the commotion in the camp of the Philistines continued and increased. So Saul said to the priest, "Withdraw your hand." Look, the ark was not needed at all, and Saul came to that conclusion when the report of the continued commotion in the Philistine camp increased and increased. The Lord was already at work on the Philistines. Bringing the ark would not increase the work of the Lord. You don't, the Lord is already there. Therefore, Saul changed his mind and said to Ahijah of the priestly line, "Withdraw your hand." In other words, Saul was saying to Ahijah something like this: "Don't write that down. Don't deliver that order after all. It's not needed. Just forget it." That's what Saul meant. Well, Jonathan's action against the camp of the Philistines brought great courage to the Israelites with Saul and Gibeah, and with those warriors who were at Geba with Jonathan. Swords drawn in this camp of the Philistines, friend against friend, in the confusion of the Philistine camp. Friend against friend, soldier against soldier, Philistine soldier against soldier, Philistine friend against Philistine friend in the camp. Verse number 20. Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and came to the battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was very great confusion. We would like to say that this great confusion in the Philistine camp was the work of Jonathan. We'd even like to say it was the work of the armor bearer. But it was not the work of either of them. It was the work of the Lord. The Lord did for Israel what He had promised He would do, and He did it many times in the record book of Deuteronomy, the record book of Joshua, the record book of Judges. What was that? When the people were faithful to the Lord would defeat Israel's, the people's enemies. Once again, the Lord kept His promise and caused the Philistines to draw their swords against each other in their own camp. But the writer was not through with the record of this campaign. There were Hebrew defectors, if you remember, living with the Philistines. Let's catch up on that. Mind you, that was not new for Hebrews to be living among the Philistines. Even during the time of when the Philistines were controlling Israel while Samson was becoming of age, even Samson, when he was of age, camped with the Philistines. So too, with the death of Samson, the reorganization of the Philistine leadership, the crowning of Saul as king, there were still Hebrews camping with the Philistines in the Promised Land. The Philistines were not supposed to be there, but they were still basically controlling Israel, even while Saul is king, and we're still in the second year of him being king. So we come to the comrades, the Jewish comrades of the Philistine camps, and what they did after the Lord shook the camp with fear and dread. Verse number 21. Now the Hebrews who were with the Philistines previously, who went up with them all around in the camp, even they also turned to be with the Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. The old school Hebrews who were playing the Philistine game, drinking their Kool-Aid, playing both sides of the national game simultaneously, got the message and returned to the proper side. Their Hebrew side, the side of the nation of Israel and Saul as king. Now the confusion of the Philistine camp led to the deserting of the comrades of the Philistine camp. Now we come to the chase of the Philistine camp. Verse number 22. When all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines had fled, even they also pursued them closely in the battle. So the Lord delivered Israel that day, and the battle spread beyond Beth Aven. The hopeless warriors of Israel who had fled from Saul at Gilgal heard the news of the power of the Lord over the Philistines and emerged from their hiding places to join in the battle with Saul, with Jonathan, with the armor bearer, with the army of Israel, with Saul, to rout those Philistines out of the camp. In doing so, the Philistines were pushed back past Beth Aven. Now, it was located in the mountains of Benjamin, just east of Bethel. The name means the house of nothingness. Beth Aven, the house of nothingness. By the way, when you see the word Beth, that means the house. When you say, and the word Aven means nothingness. We do not know how to apply the name Beth Aven to this story or where that name came from. We don't know. But what we do know is that the army of Israel routed the Philistines to that place in the tribal area of Benjamin where they could do nothing. But why had the army of Israel only pushed the Philistines to Beth Aven instead of totally defeating the Philistines? The reason rested in the plan of Saul, not the plan of Jonathan, but the plan of Saul and the pledge that Saul made his soldiers take on the day of that battle. Verse number 24. Now the men of Israel were hard pressed on that day, for Saul had put the people under oath, saying, "Cursed be the man who eats food before evening and until I have avenged myself on my enemies." So none of the people tasted food. All the people entered the forest, and there was honey on the ground. And when the people entered the forest, behold, there was a flow of honey. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Here we must speculate just a little about the timing of the day's events. Follow me with this. Jonathan and his armor bearer had secretly moved to the edge of the Philistine camp with a plan to reveal themselves to the Philistines and wait for the Philistines to reply to them. And Jonathan had this test to determine, put in place to determine if it was the Lord's will to attack the Philistine army. The Philistines answered with the statement that Jonathan had predetermined would be the sign from the Lord that the Lord would help the two men defeat the Philistine garrison. The two men attacked the Philistines. The Lord caused the earth to tremble. The Philistines were confused and afraid and began to attack each other with their attack. But evidently, before his army pursued the running Philistines, which were on their way, trembling, Saul put all his warriors underneath a pledge. Both the warriors with Saul of Gibeah and the warriors or soldiers that were supposed to be with Jonathan and Geba, but didn't even know where Jonathan and his armor bearer was, they were put under this pledge. They all pursued the Philistines all day without a morsel of food to give them strength. As we will see, the hunger of the Israelite soldiers was why the army could not ultimately defeat the Philistines that day. We will come to that point when we reach verse number 30. But for now, this problem occurred between Saul and his son Jonathan, verse number 27. But Jonathan had not heard when his father put the people under oath. Therefore, he put out the end of his staff that was in his hand and dipped it in the honeycomb, and he put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes brightened. Jonathan was hungry. After killing at least 20 men, pursuing the Philistines to Bethaven, he had not heard his father's pledge. They were on the attack. There was the honey. He was hungry. Therefore, he ate. But as soon as Jonathan ate the honey, which probably took less than 3 seconds to happen. Think about that. A soldier saw it. He saw it occur, and he made this pronouncement to Jonathan. Verse number 28. Then one of the people said, "Your father strictly put the people under oath, saying, 'Cursed be the man who eats food today.' And the people were weary." The news of the pledge was new to Solomon. To Jonathan. He had not heard it. The deed was done. He could not take it back. He looked at the men with him, and he saw that they were all very weary from starvation. What did Jonathan say? What was Jonathan's comeback? Verse number 29. Then Jonathan said, "My father has troubled the land. See now how my eyes have brightened because I tasted a little of the honey. How much more if only the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found." Okay, we must wonder why the army of Israel did not do what they usually did. Now, what did they usually do? They did not take advantage of the food left behind by the Philistines as they fled for safety. In Jonathan's eyes, his father had placed a terrible burden on the men of the army of Israel that day. What was Jonathan's conclusion? Verse number 30b. "For now the slaughter among the Philistines has not been great." That's what he said. What is he saying here? Jonathan is saying that the defeat of the Philistines would have been much greater that day if his father had not put that silly old pledge on his soldiers of Israel. In other words, by starving his own men, Saul had hampered the victory of the Philistines. With Jonathan's answer that conflicted with Saul's command, the people followed Jonathan, and they began to plunder the Philistine spoils because they were hungry. Thus, the plunder resulted in a crime, another crime, all because of Jonathan's answer. Verse number 31. They struck among the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very weary. And the people rushed greatly upon the spoils and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people ate them with the blood. Saul and his men must have pursued the Philistines to Bethaven. When the men who were stationed at Gibeah caught up with Jonathan, then they pursued the Philistines as far as Ajalon. Okay, we need to understand something. At Ajalon, they took the lead from Jonathan and ate because they were hungry and because they saw Jonathan eat. We often speed through passages and miss some important points. If you remember, Saul pursued the Philistines from Michmash to Bethaven in the eastern portion of the tribal area of Benjamin. Here we learn that Jonathan pursued the Philistines from Michmash to the village of Ajalon. What does that mean? It means that while Saul was headed east to pursue the Philistines, Jonathan was headed west for the same purpose. Ajalon was a town that was originally in the tribal area of Dan to the west in Benjamin's land. It was now it's near the near the border of Dan, but it's now in Benjamin's land. The border has been moved, which by the way broke the law. They shouldn't have moved the border, but they did. And by this time, the border of Benjamin had been moved, and Ajalon was in the tribal area of Benjamin. Picture this. Saul was just about as far east as he could go in the land of Benjamin. Jonathan was just about as far west as he could go in the land of Benjamin. Well, we all know how people are. Someone had to tell Saul. The charge of the crime was delivered to Saul. Verse number 33. Then they told Saul, saying, "Behold, the people are sinning against the Lord by eating with the blood." And he said, "You have acted treacherously. Roll a great stone to me today." In the statement, the tattletale that is telling this story, it's found in these words. They are eating with the blood. Did the passage tell us that? Yes. Did they actually eat with the blood? Probably not. It is true that in the law of the Lord, no man was to eat the blood of the animal because the life of the animal was in the blood. It was the law. But the writer did not tell us that these Israelites with Jonathan did not properly kill these animals so that the blood would drain and before they cooked the meat and began to eat. Since the days of Moses, all the Israelites knew how to prepare meat for cooking and eating properly. Why would they change their habits now? However, the charge against Jonathan and the men was supercharged with these words because it caused Saul to think the worst of his son and his son's leadership. It was a treacherous act in Saul's mind. Therefore, he called for a large stone to be rolled into the center of his camp at Beth-Aven, and my stars, if Saul is not going to create a worse sin than the men did by eating. What did Saul do with this big stone? Saul made it into an altar where he could make a contribution and offering. It was Saul's second offering to the Lord, verse number 34. Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, each of you bring me his ox or his sheep and slaughter it here and eat, and do not sin against the Lord by eating with the blood." So all the people that night brought each one his ox with him and slaughtered it there. It was Saul's second offering to the Lord. So we ask the question, when was his first offering? Well, the first offering occurred when Saul failed to wait on the arrival of Samuel at Gilgal just a few days before this point in the story. At Gilgal, Saul sinned. As we will see at Beth-Aven, Saul will sin again with this altar. Meanwhile, with this stone in place, Saul ordered the offerings of animals to be fed to the men, and they are told to dress the animals correctly so that they will not be guilty of eating the blood like he has heard his son and the soldiers with his son have done. And with the king's approval, Saul's army would eat that night of the spoils of the Philistine animals. But to eat, guess what? Saul had his first altar to be built. This is his first altar. It's his second offering, but it's his first altar. Verse number 35. And Saul built an altar to the Lord. It was the first altar that he built to the Lord. See, I don't make this stuff up. Why was this action Saul's second contribution or second offering, but at the same time, his first altar? The answer is easy. There was already an altar at Gilgal that had been there since the days of Joshua when they crossed over from the Jordan River and with the nation of Israel for the very first time. Saul did not build an altar at Gilgal, but at Beth-Aven, no altar existed. So therefore, Saul built an altar for the contributions. It was his first altar to be built, and it is also an indication that it was early in Saul's reign as king. It was still in his second year as king. Now, where would the army of Saul acquire the animals to offer on the new altar. The writer tells us of the pursuit of the men under the order of Saul to gather the spoils of the Philistines to contribute to the altar to eat. Verse number 36. Let us go down to the Philistines by night and take spoil among them until the morning light, and let us not leave a man of them. And they said, do whatever seems good to you. Why did Saul give this instruction to his men? They had pursued the Philistines to Beth-Aven, where they stopped to rest. They were exhausted. They were exhausted and they were hungry. And Saul had not acquired his goal with the Philistines, and therefore he could not let his men eat until they reached his goal. He needed to be consistent in his order. His need to be consistent in his order overrode his ability to do right by his men and let them eat. Therefore, he ordered his men to attack the Philistines who were beyond them past Beth-Aven, destroy every one of them by night, gather the spoils, and return to Beth-Aven to eat. Well, what happened next? For some reason, rightly, the priests in the camp called for prayer to see if Saul's plan was God's will. Think of that, a priest calling for prayer. Verse number 36b. So the priest said, let us draw near to God here. Saul inquired of God, shall I go down after the Philistines? Will you give them into the hand of Israel? Well, what was the answer of the Lord? We'll find that out in our next time together.